Chapter 14. My heart was still beating a mile a minute as Tyrion flew Jemma and I back toward the shoreline where we docked our schooner. Even though the dragons in the volcano hadn't torched this part of the island with their fiery breaths, the flames had now spread through the entirety of the forest and created a burning supernova. Tyrion kept us under the cover of the clouds as we flew, but even through the cool mist, I could feel the blazing heat that radiated off the inferno below.
Oh, I hope the rest of the crew made it back to the ship safely.
Jemma worried with a shudder.
I don't see how they could make it through if the flames were this intense the whole journey.
I trust Melky's water breath, I reassured the Nerolope woman. I figure if the water dragons and the fire dragons both have mystical, elemental powers, they'd at least cancel each other out. Not to mention, it's fire versus water. I can't think of many situations where fire wins that battle.
I hope you're right,
Tyrion sighed.
I was just starting to like Melky.
We continued on through the clouds for another 10 minutes or so, until the silver dragon finally brought us down from our cover. Tyrion descended with caution, and I could tell he was fearful one of the larger dragons may have followed us, or that there were possibly more armed orcs on the ground. However, the coast was clear, and we were greeted with the sight of the sandy white beach and the pristine sapphire blue water of the ocean. I did a double take, though, when I saw the dragon queen wasn't where we had anchored it. Oh no. Had it been hijacked by those orc bastards? Or had it gotten torched by one of the dragons as they did a flyby of the island perimeter? Where the hell is our ship? I demanded. Jemma put her hand up above her eyes to form a visor, and then looked out along the horizon.
There!
She pointed off in the distance.
That's the Dragon Queen, all right.
Sure enough, there was a lone ship out on the water to the west of our position. It was moving full speed ahead through the choppy waves, most likely in hot pursuit of the fleeing dragons. Still, I couldn't help but wonder who was piloting our ship. Had it been long enough for the whole crew to make it through the burning woods? Likewise, had there even been enough time for them to get on board, hoist the anchor, and then get out to sea like they had? Do you think it's our friends on it, though? I pondered aloud. For all we know, it could have been stolen by the orcs while we were trying to evade Tyrion's mother.
There's only one way to find out.
Jemma gulped.
Tyrion, let's get over to that ship.
The silver dragon banked right and then swooped down so he was horizontal with the water once more. He flew at the dragon queen like he'd been shot out of a cannon, and soon we were right up near the schooner ship. I let out a long sigh of relief when I saw the figures out on the deck. 6 of them had bright neon-colored hair, and equally as colorful butterfly wings on their backs. Next to them were 2 women clad in furry bikinis, who had big bushy tails coming out of their rears. Then there were a bunch of dragonkin, including a young boy and an old man in a robe. Yep, that was definitely my crew.
Ha ha! There's our captain now!
Nadir cackled as she ran to the side of the ship and pointed in our direction.
I told you he was coming back! Clear the deck so Tyrion can land!
Mira commanded from her position behind the wheel. We watched as all of my crewmates scattered around to the edges of the deck, which left a large open space where Tyrion could land. The silver dragon slowed his speed as well as the intensity of his beating wings until he was just hovering in the air. Finally, he gently lowered himself down onto the deck, where the rest of the crew swarmed us like we'd just found the last golden ticket.
We were worried about you, Ben,
Sela stated in a matter-of-fact tone.
When you went back for Tyrion and Jemma, we figured all hope was lost.
Trust me, I chuckled. I was just as worried as you were.
About us?
Lazan teased.
Or about yourselves?
Both, I winked. Even when I was clinging onto Tyrion's back legs, holding on for dear life while we were being chased by his pissed-off mother, I was worried about how you guys were holding up walking through the flames.
It was so cool, Dad!
Eric declared as he ran up to me and started acting out their great escape.
Melky's water turned into a mist all around us, and it made all this crackling sound like shh. The whole time we were moving, a couple of trees almost fell on us too, but Melky was able to knock them away.
It sounds like Melky did everything I asked him to and more. I smiled at the copper-scaled water dragon. I guess that means I owe him another whole boar to himself.
Oh, that sounds wonderful, Ben!
Melky's eyes lit up, and a thick spittle of drool oozed out of his mouth as it hung open like a trout's. Even though the water dragon's eyes were fixed onto me, they were so spaced out I figured his mind was on the juicy, tasty boars that awaited him when he got back to our home island. Arik frowned, walked over to his bondmate, and then snapped his fingers in front of Malky's eyes.
Malky!
The dragon prince implored.
Buddy, can you hear me? Dad, do you think he might have inhaled too much smoke?
I think he's just dreaming about not one, but the two boars I owe him now, I snorted.
Oh, Saren is going to be so jealous!
The adolescent water dragon proclaimed.
Two boars owe to myself, and her and Mum and Dad will just be stuck eating fish and entrails.
Maybe next time they'll volunteer to come on an adventure with us, I chuckled. Though I can't give away too many boars, or the whole island's going to be depopulated trying to squash your guys' appetites.
That actually brings up a good question.
Scylla spoke up.
Would we have had enough food on the island to sustain all of those dragons? They look like they'd eat a lot.
You wouldn't have to worry about feeding them.
Kandara explained.
A fire dragon is a solitary hunter, so they'd just fly off to another nearby island to find their food anyways.
Also, Jonas interjected with a frown. What exactly do you mean by, would we have? There's still a chance for us to salvage at least a portion of the herd.
You sure about that? I raised an eyebrow. Because we literally watched all eight of those scaly sky lizards take out a small army of orcs, and then saw one of them try to murder her own son. That's about as far gone as I can imagine.
I think the issue was, I tried to rebond too many beings at once, the soothsayer continued. If we are able to catch up to the dragons and do the rebonding ceremony one by one, it would be much simpler, and it would take a lot less time. Particularly if I perform the ceremony on one of the women whose bond has already started to be formed.
What do you mean? I asked the old dragonkin man. I thought none of the bonds were formed. That's why the dragons went apeshit. Jonas shook his peppered head.
Not exactly. Remember how Lezan, Nadir, Elzara, and Dalwin all claimed they could hear voices? Those were the voices of the dragons they were bonding with.
If it was working, then why couldn't anyone else hear the voices?
Ahuara pondered aloud.
I wish I knew, Jonas shrugged. It may have been purely random, or perhaps it was simply that O'Shan was looking down on those four women fondly today.
Lezan, Nadir, Dalwin, and Elzara. I racked my brain as I tried to figure out what the common thread was between these four. Dalwin and Nadir were both the leaders of their respective people, and Lezan and Elzara seemed to be the members of their tribe that the leaders had the strongest connections to. Dalwin was like a mother figure to the young blue-haired Morpho, while Nadir and Lezan were respectful frenemies. Still, why them? Did it have something to do with their age? That couldn't have been it, mainly because there was a huge discrepancy between Dalwin and Elzara, and next to none between the two Kunag women. Ahuara was obviously the second in command of this Morpho tribe, so it didn't have anything to do with their place on the social hierarchy.
That's when it hit me.
At first it was realization, which then quickly turned to shock, and then into happiness. I had slept with all four of these women, and they had all taken my seed deep inside of them. Lezan and Nadir were both already pregnant, which meant...
Oh, my God. I grinned and looked at the two Morpho women.
What's wrong, Draco Rex?
Dalwin crossed her arms over her chest.
You're pregnant, I declared. You're both pregnant.
How could you know that?
Elzara gasped, and her brown eyes nearly popped out of her head.
I haven't had any symptoms yet.
Oh, please.
Dalwin scoffed.
You're so young and naive. You wouldn't even know the symptoms if you had them. What I'm curious about is how Ben could possibly know that. As of last night, I was not with child.
Well, no, I admitted. But I think Paulan's instructions may have come in handy for us, if you catch my drift.
You think?
Queen Dalwin trailed off, and then a soft smile came to her lips.
You think the strange position worked?
I think so, I grinned. I don't know why that would be the case, but that's got to be the reason the dragons partially bonded with you and not any of the other Morphos. It's because you have my child inside of you.
That might make sense, Jonas admitted as he rubbed his chin. By default, the Draco Rex has one of the most powerful dragon bonds in the world. If his DNA now resides within you, this could explain why it was easier for you to bond with the dragons.
So, does that mean we're out of luck?
Zarantri spoke up with a soft voice, and her wings drooped sadly behind her.
We can't be bonded with the dragons at all?
I never said that, Jonas countered. But the evidence seems to indicate it's much easier to form the bond if you've been impregnated by the Draco Rex.
Zarantri's face turned white for a second, but then it quickly shifted to beet red. The blush in her cheeks continued to intensify until it was just about the same shade as her hair, and then the butterfly woman glanced down at the ground. But, even though she was acting shy and embarrassed, I noticed a small smirk twinge up the sides of her mouth.
That shouldn't be a problem,
Dalwin noted.
In fact, I would highly recommend you ladies all let Ben impregnate you, for the sake of the rebonding ceremony and the sake of our species' survival. Plus, it's a very, very fun time.
Gross!
Eric gagged.
There's nothing gross about two beings creating a sacred bond,
Dalwin explained to my son.
When one person enters another, it's the most sensual, pleasurable experience you could possibly have. Then, a beautiful child forms and grows in the woman's womb as a result of the lovemaking.
I haven't given him the birds and the bees talk yet, I explained to the Morpho Queen. He's still at that age when he thinks girls are icky.
Oh, no!
Elzara gasped.
Does that mean your bloodline ends with him?
It took me a minute to realize what she was hinting at, and then I laughed at her concern. It's not like that, I explained. He'll find a mate eventually, but right now he's more worried about things like playing soldier and skipping rocks and learning how to fight.
Why would our bloodline end with me?
Eric cocked his head to the side curiously. I'll tell you when you're a little older, I promised. Right after I have the birds and the bees talk with you.
I don't know what these birds and bees talk is about,
the Dragon Prince admitted.
But shouldn't that be something Isla teaches me?
If Isla's teaching you that, I may need to have a little talk with her. I chuckled.
Not to diverge from the topic at hand,
Mira interjected.
But if that's the case, how is it that I can have a dragon bond with Nixie? I'm not pregnant. We've taken many, many measures to make sure I'm not.
You can stop yourself from getting pregnant?
Eric gasped.
How do you do that?
You know what, son? I shook my head. Why don't you go off and see what Malky's up to?
He's sleeping,
Eric protested, and pointed to where the copper-scaled water dragon had collapsed against the sidewall of the deck. Shit. Gemma, I turned to the Nirlobe woman. Why don't you and Tyrion take Eric up for a little reconnaissance while we figure out what to do? Even though Eric had seen some horrible shit during this adventure, I wanted him to retain some of his innocence. And if this conversation continued down the path it was already headed in, he was definitely going to be learning some things that would tarnish his innocence. Gemma gave me a knowing nod before she sauntered back over to Tyrion.
Let's go up and see if we can find your mother,
she announced to the Silver Dragon.
They've only had a small head start, so it's not like they can be too far away.
Tyrion bowed his head again, and the Nirlope woman slung her long leg over his body. She then hoisted herself up, turned to Eric, and motioned for him to come along. My son ran over and sprang up onto the back of Tyrion without any warning or grace, and the sudden impact from his landing caused the dragon to let out a frustrated chuff. Eric's legs waggled behind him as he struggled to get up onto Tyrion's back, but then Gemma reached down and scooped him up. Finally, once both riders were snug and secure, the Silver Dragon propelled himself off the deck and up into the air. Sorry about that, I chuckled as I turned back to the women. I really didn't want my son to know about our birth control methods.
Why?
Mira asked with a raised eyebrow.
Won't he need to know about that someday?
Someday, I admitted. But not right now, that's for sure.
If you say so.
The golden-scaled dragonkin rolled her eyes.
Anyways, back to my original question. We go to great lengths to ensure I don't get pregnant, yet I was able to bond with Nixie. Why?
Maybe water dragons and fire dragons play by different rules, I suggested. It could just be an issue of simple biology.
That doesn't make any sense.
Awara protested.
Absolutely none of the Morpho men had any dragon DNA in their bodies whatsoever, yet they've been bonded with the dragons their entire lives.
They didn't need to have dragon DNA, Jonas explained. The key is in what you said right there. The Morpho men and the fire dragons were bonded for life. That implies they were bonded when they were both infants, correct?
How would I know? I wasn't there.
Awara retorted with a hint of sarcasm.
Yes!
Dalwyn rolled her eyes at the orange-haired pixie.
In our culture, the dragons are bonded with males when they are infants, so they have a completely dependent relationship with each other. The dragons never know life without the Morphos, and the Morphos never know life without the dragons.
Unless one half of the equation is killed.
Selan noted.
Exactly.
The Morpho Queen nodded.
Bond mates are forever, which is why I didn't believe you at first when you told me it was possible to rebond.
Apparently, it's not as difficult if you have dragon kin inside of you, Jonas explained. Whether it's your own or Bane's, you get the picture. We dragonkin are the closest living beings to a dragon that exists, so I suppose it's only natural we'd be able to make the bond more easily.
So does that mean we ourselves are forming a bond with the dragons?
Lizan pondered.
Or are those bonds just with the children inside of us?
That's hard to tell, the soothsayer shrugged. We would need to actually finish the ceremony, and then wait for the baby to be born to make that distinction.
One thing's for sure, I sighed. We're not going to ever know if we let those dragons get away. Tyrion, Gemma, Eric, do you guys see anything from up there?
I can see them, but they are very far away,
Tyrion answered.
They're really far away,
Gemma added with a twinge of fear.
I'm not sure how we're going to catch up to them in just our ship.
We'll catch them, I reassured the Nirlope woman. They've got children and elderly dragons in their herd, so they can't go for too long without taking a rest. We'll get to them when they pause for a break.
I don't know about that,
Kandara admitted.
Even when elderly, dragons can travel for great distances without interruption.
Then maybe the pudgy one will cause some slowdown, I half joked. That thing's gotta have major joint damage in his wings by now. Mira shook her head.
He might appear to be overweight, but I can assure you his body is mostly muscle.
Well, shit. I ran my hands through my locks. Can we get the Dragon Queen going any faster?
We're already moving at full speed ahead.
The jade-haired dragonkin sighed.
The wind is at our back as well.
Great, I grumbled. How in the fuck are we going to catch up to them now? If we lose them now, it's going to take forever to find them all again. I buried my face into my hands as a dull beat of frustration rose up from my stomach. We'd put in so much work and time into finding these dragons. And now we were going to let them get away just because our ship wasn't fast enough to keep up with their wings. We'd basically be right back to square one, where we'd have to travel around to the different islands as we searched aimlessly for their kind. Even worse, if the dragons were scattered about, that would mean the orcs had a better chance of catching one.
Ben?
Elzara's angelic voice broke through my frustration.
I don't think all hope is lost.
What do you mean? I raised my eyes to the blue-haired butterfly woman. Our chances of catching up to them are slim to none.
I know that.
The Morpho woman agreed.
But I can still hear the dragon that was trying to bond to me.
What? My mouth fell agape as I reached out and grabbed Elzara by the shoulders. What do you mean you can still hear them?
Ugh, thank the gods.
Nadir wiped her brow.
I thought I was going crazy and starting to hear voices.
You can hear them too? I asked the raccoon woman. Why didn't you say anything?
Because I thought I was going mad.
She shrugged.
I didn't want you to worry about the crazy Kunag woman going mad and endangering the mission even more. Besides, it's not like they are clear voices or anything. More just like a whisper and a gut feeling.
What sort of a gut feeling? Jonas implored. If this is what I think it is, then fortune has smiled on us very much this day.
It's hard to explain.
Dalwyn spoke up as her brow crinkled in thought.
It almost feels like that twinge of pain you get in your stomach when you're nervous.
Like butterflies in the stomach, I asked. The faces of the Morpho women cringed at my words.
Oh, that's morbid.
Elzara shuddered. It's an expression, I reassured the women. I'm not really eating butterflies.
Elzara here tells us otherwise.
Alara winked.
She says you ate her very well.
The butterfly women began to giggle, but I just rolled my eyes.
Do you feel the same sensation right now?
Jonas questioned and got us back on track.
Or was it just when you were down in the volcano with the dragons?
Both,
Lazan said.
Though I'll admit the feeling has waned somewhat since we got to the ship.
Ah! It is a Noribond!
Jonas clapped his hands together and grinned.
Perhaps we still have a chance after all!
A Nori what? I asked the soothsayer as I scratched at my temple.
A Noribond is a special type of bond between dragons and their bondmates,
the soothsayer explained.
It always occurs in the early stages of the dragon bond, usually when infants or small children are first being introduced to their bondmates. Essentially, the bondmates can hear each other reaching out to them, but they can't quite understand what they are saying. And that feeling in your stomachs, that only occurs when you are in close proximity to the dragon you bonded with.
So it's like an internal biological compass, I smiled as realization set in. A biological compass that'll tell us when we get close to those dragons.
Four of the dragons, at least.
Nadir sighed.
But I guess that's better than none, huh?
I wouldn't be so sure.
Queen Dalwyn interjected.
I've been around enough of these dragons to know they are usually not solitary creatures. They almost always travel in herds, or at least in pairs of two. The only exception would be if they were going off to give birth.
That explains why Tyrion's mother was alone when we found her.
Mira noted.
She was in a giant nest on the beach with not another single dragon in sight.
How far away do you have to be for this Noribond to work?
Sela asked the soothsayer.
In theory, it will always work until these four find their bondmates and finish the bonding process,
Jonas explained.
So you're telling me I have to deal with this achy feeling all the time now?
Lazan groaned.
Even when we're back on the Dragonkin Island?
If we go that far away, the feeling will dull down into nothing more than a strange feeling in the back of your mind.
The old dragonkin elaborated.
Technically, it will still be present, though it won't be consciously on your mind at all points in the day. Unless your bondmate is nearby, of course.
And if a giant fire-breathing dragon is that close to our home island, I began, we're fucked anyways.
So, does that mean we'll get our mate's dragons back?
Zorandri asked as she looked down and brushed her right foot across the deck.
You sure as fuck will, I grinned. At least, if I have anything to say about it.
What shall we do then, Dracorex?
Sela asked.
Shall we abandon our mission and go back home? You said it yourself. We won't be able to catch up with the dragons in the Dragon Queen. Perhaps it would be wise to head back, regroup, and then use these biological compasses to try and find them again?
Not yet, Sela. I shook my head. They might be flying faster than we can sail, but I don't want to give up just yet. Tyrion's mom thinks we're dead, so I doubt they even know we're following them. Maybe they'll eventually find a quiet island to land at, and then we can try to do the rebonding ceremony again.
If we can get close enough.
Ahuara reminded me.
I don't know about you, but I thought it was difficult enough to sneak up on the dragons when they were sleeping soundly. Now that they're awake and alert, it's going to be a tricky process.
That's why it's going to take a lot of planning and a lot of skill. I winked at the orange-haired pixie. And a whole lot of luck.
Luck?
Ahuara raised her eyebrows at me.
You'd really risk your life and the lives of your crew based purely on luck?
I wouldn't be the first time.
Mira joked.
Though I'll admit, it has worked out in our favor more often than not.
So, you all just wait around to get lucky?
Ahuara placed her hands on her hips. I couldn't help but snicker at the phrasing of the sentence, but I tried to stay stone-faced. Maybe luck is the wrong word, I admitted. It's more like I know deep down in my bones we'll be able to succeed. Because I trust my crew. Your skills, your combat abilities, and most importantly, your instincts and your ability to make quick decisions.
I trust you guys to help me pull through, even when the odds are completely stacked against us.
So it's not luck, then.
Ahuaro winked.
And here I thought you were trying to tell me you had just lucked your way into becoming the Draco Rex.
I wouldn't say it had nothing to do with that, either. I chuckled and then turned to the sky. Guys, what's the situation like up there?
The dragons have finally slowed their pace,
Gemma explained telepathically.
I think maybe they're coming out of their fits of rage. At least, I sure hope that's what's happening.
How much slower are we talking? I asked. Like, do you think we'll be able to catch them now?
They're still moving too fast for us,
Tyrion's voice interjected.
But I think we're moving fast enough that we can at least keep our eyes on them as they travel.
And that's what we'll do.
I said through a yawn. We'll keep tailing them until they decide to take a rest. We've got enough supply stocked up to last us for at least another day or two at sea. But I'm still hoping they'll land sooner rather than later. I didn't like the idea of potentially running out of water, but there was no time to figure out an alternative. So we'd cross the bridge if we came to it.
Speaking of rest,
Mira interjected.
Do you need to get some, Ben? You look like you haven't slept in days.
Yeah, I chuckled. It's more stress than exhaustion, but I guess that's the effect of having her whole plan go south and then almost getting incinerated by not one, but 8 different giant pissed-off dragons.
Go rest, Ben,
Dalwyn pleaded.
We will take care of things up here. Mira knows how to sail the ship, and Tyrion and his riders will keep us informed of anything that's coming our way.
We'll come and get you if anything important happens,
Mira promised. Fine, I conceded. But only if Jonas takes a breather, too. He's got to be 1,000,000 times more stressed out than I am right now.
You don't know the half of it, Draco Rex,
the soothsayer agreed as he ran his hands across his tired eyes.
I believe I could sleep for several cycles of the moon.
The soothsayer and I both begrudgingly trudged over to the ladder that led below the deck, and then descended. Once our feet touched down on the wood of the lower deck, I turned to the soothsayer and put my hand on his shoulder. It's not your fault, Jonas, I reassured him once again. I know things are looking pretty grim right now, but there was nothing either of us could have done to keep those orc bastards from messing up the ceremony. Jonas's eyes were tired and sad, but a soft smile spread across his face as he took in my words of encouragement.
Thank you, Ben,
the elderly dragonkin nodded.
I know it's not completely my fault, but I can't help but think about all the things I could have done differently that could have prevented the problem in the first place. Maybe if I'd bonded the women one at a time, or if I...
It doesn't matter now, I cut Jonas off. All that matters is you go get some rest.
Maybe you're right.
Jonas hung his head.
Perhaps a brief sleep will take my mind off things. I will see you in a bit, Draco Rex.
Jonas rubbed his eyes once more before he turned and slowly sauntered away to the crew's quarters. He opened up the door with a yawn, stretched intensely, and then stepped inside. I wandered across the bottom deck to the captain's quarters, which were located all the way at the back of the ship. Then I threw open the door, slipped inside, and instantly removed my weapons belt. I tossed the belt onto the nearby wooden table before I tore off my shirt and threw it onto the ground, and then I meandered over to the bed at the side of the room. It wasn't the most comfortable thing in the world, since it was a mattress built out of simple silk and then stuffed with straw, but it was a cushioned bed nonetheless, and it beat the alternative of sleeping on hard planks of wood. Plus, there was a light sheet to cover up with, and a pillow stuffed with straw as well. It might not have been a 5-star resort, but it more than did the trick. I hopped onto the mattress, pulled the covers over my body, and then nestled into the pillow. The gentle waves of the ocean splashed against the sides of the Dragon Queen with a harsh yet luring crash, and my quarters felt like they were gently rocking in the sea. Slowly but surely, I felt my eyes grow heavy, and I started to drift off to sleep. The next thing I knew, I was awakened by the sound of soft knocking at my door, so I threw off the covers, rolled out of bed, and then rubbed my eyes as I proceeded to the entrance. I opened it up just a crack to see the orange eyes of Ahuaro staring back at me, atop her adorable, freckled button nose.
Hey,
I greeted the butterfly warrior groggily.
What's up?
Did the dragons finally land?
No, not yet.
The pixie shook her head.
May I come in?
Sure, sure. I agreed as I opened up the door and stepped back. As the Morpho warrior stepped through the threshold of the door, I noticed her eyes shift over to my bare torso for a moment before they flitted away.
I just wanted to ask you something.
She gulped. Ahura was acting much more subdued than normal. Her eyes were darting back and forth slowly, and she wouldn't make eye contact with me whatsoever. At the same time, she had her hands crossed over her chest, and her pink wings fluttered in short, sporadic spurts. "Is everything okay?" I asked as I stepped up and looked Ahura right in her eyes. "You look like you're a nervous wreck."
"That's because I am."
The pixie's eyes stared deep into mine.
"In our culture, what I'm about to ask is completely uncalled for, but coming from a woman."
Suddenly, a million different possibilities raced through my mind. Only about half of them were dirty, but it was enough to create a dull, pulsating sensation in my nether regions. "I'm not a part of your culture, Ahura," I promised the butterfly woman. "Trust me, whatever you're about to ask, I'll be okay with it." The orange-haired beauty wiggled her nose and bit her lip, but she hesitated to say anything more. Finally, she took a deep breath, uncrossed her arms, and looked away.
I want you to impregnate me,"
she stated in a very matter-of-fact tone. My mouth watered at the thought of making love to this beautiful woman, but I wasn't going to just pounce before she was ready. "Why do you want that?" I chuckled nervously. "Did Dolwyn and Elzara tell you about how much fun it was?"
"It's not about the pleasure or the fun,"
Ahura admitted.
"Though that sounded great. No, I'm asking because I want to finally prove myself to Dolwyn. If I'm pregnant with your child, that will let me control a dragon. And if I have a dragon, I can prove my worth as the greatest warrior in this Morpho tribe."
"Hold on," I shook my head. "Why do you have to prove yourself to anybody? The rest of your tribe love you and have a ridiculous amount of respect for you. In fact, I'm pretty sure I shouldn't be saying this, but one of them even told me they wished you were their leader."
They did?"
Ahura's eyes went wide, and her mouth fell agape.
"Please tell me you didn't repeat that to Dolwyn."
"I didn't, I promised. What, do you think she would go all mad queen and have you executed or something?"
"Oh, Dolwyn would never execute one of her own."
The orange-haired pixie shook her head.
"She's not a cruel or vindictive leader like that. But it would make her very upset, and would only lead to a divide between the women of our tribe. They may think I'm a good leader, but I'm only in charge when Dolwyn is away."
"Is that why you want the dragon?" I raised an eyebrow at the butterfly woman. "So you can prove to Dolwyn you're more than just a second in command."
"I want a dragon so she doesn't devalue me even further,"
Ahura explained.
"She's already cozying up to Elzara a lot more lately. Once they both have dragons at their sides, I will surely be downgraded."
"Nobody could ever downgrade you, Ahura," I assured the beautiful butterfly woman. "You're one of the greatest warriors I've ever met, and you'd make a damn fine leader. Which are actually both of the traits of damn fine mothers." Ahura's face turned red, and a soft chuckle escaped her pursed lips.
"You think so?"
"You would be," I nodded. "Especially if you had one with me. Have you met Eric? If his mother wasn't as good of a leader as she was, he'd be one of those kids who's always running around causing trouble."
"I'd love to have a little Eric of my own."
Ahura's voice turned distant.
"Or even a little Erikina, or whatever I'd name a girl. It's just, I've never really seen that as an option since, well, you know."
"Well, it's an option now," I promised Ahura. I placed my hand on her delicate face and looked her squarely in her orange eyes. My pants tightened around my cock as I touched her soft skin, and she responded with a gasp when she glanced downward.
Is that you?"
She gulped. "Mm-hmm," I winked. "You want to see?" Ahura's eyes went wide for a moment, but after a moment they grew hungry. Then the orange-haired pixie pulled away from my touch, strutted over to the table, and leaned over it. My jaw dropped as she slowly slid her silk garment up her body to reveal her perfect, tight little ass and taut pussy lips.
"I'm ready whenever you are,"
Ahura purred.
"I don't need to see it. Just thrust it deep inside of me then.
Then the orange-haired pixie looked forward, placed her hands on the sides of the table, and leaned down face first into the wood with her lower half still exposed. I was both very turned on and very, very confused. "What are you doing?" I questioned the butterfly woman.
"What do you mean?"
Ahuara frowned over her shoulder.
"I'm inviting you to impregnate me. Isn't this how it works?"
"I mean, I'm not going to say no," I admitted. "But where I come from, there's usually a bit more, intimacy."
"Intimacy?"
Ahuara stood up from her bent position and turned around to face me with a raised eyebrow.
"When you mate?"
Oh boy. I knew the Morpho men only bred with the Morpho women for practical purposes, but I never realized how completely loveless their relationships were. Dalwin understood what I was talking about, I explained. I mean, Elzara didn't, but that's because she was a virgin.
Oh, Dalwin is a queen.
Ahuara rolled her eyes.
She could do whatever she wanted to whoever she wanted. Honestly, I never really asked about how she made it because, frankly, I assumed it was similar to my own experiences.
Apparently not. I shook my head.
How about this?
Ahuara asked as she laid back on the table face up and then spread her legs.
Is this intimate enough for you?
I shook my head again and chuckled as I approached the butterfly woman. When I got over to her, I hoisted myself up onto the table, positioned myself over her body, and looked down into her deep orange eyes. I guess I'll have to show you how it's done, then, I whispered to the beautiful woman. Then I reached out, brushed a bit of her orange locks off her forehead, and leaned in to kiss her. She tensed up as my lips touched hers, but I tried to start off slowly. I gave her soft, gentle pecks on the mouth while I explored her hair with one hand and her petite body with the other. And Ahuara let out a soft moan of satisfaction when I moved down to her neck and gave it a nibble.
Is this how it's supposed to be?
The orange-haired pixie gasped. It can be whatever you want it to be, Ahuara. I half groaned into her ear. My erection was hard as steel and pressing up against Ahuara's pussy, with the only thing between them being two thin layers of fabric. Ahuara must have felt my firm cock pressing up against her too, because her entire lower body began to tremble.
"Do you want me to touch it?"
the orange-haired woman blurted out. "Of course I do," I grinned as I hopped back to my feet. "But I think you want to touch it too." Ahuara sat up and watched with great attention as I slid my thumbs underneath my waist and then pulled my pants to the ground. Her mouth fell open when she saw the size of my erection, but she slowly beckoned me to come closer.
"Wow,"
she gasped.
"I can see why the other two are raving about this."
"Uh-uh," I shook my head. "You gotta get naked too." The orange-haired butterfly woman furrowed her brow and wiggled her nose as she frowned. Then she got up onto her knees, reached down, and pulled the sheer fabric off her body. There was a tuft of bright orange hair just above the lips of her womanhood, though it was trimmed down to a perfect little trail. Her tummy was tight and toned, topped off by a cute little belly button. Ahuara's breasts were small but perky, and her dark red nipples were at full attention when they were released from their fabric prison. Without wasting another second, I moved over to Ahuara, kissed her intensely, and ran my hands along her nipples. At the same time, the beautiful orange-haired pixie wrapped her hands around my cock and began to stroke me softly. I could tell by the sporadic, jerky motions that she hadn't done this a lot before, but I really didn't care. Ahuara was a beautiful, happy, orange goddess of a woman, and the mere fact she was touching me was all I needed to be turned on. I pulled away from her mouth, kissed down her neck and chest, and then sucked on each of her erect nipples softly.
"Oh,"
she moaned as I nibbled on her breasts.
"Oh, that feels amazing, Ben."
"We're not even to the best part yet," I teased. I kissed my way back up to Ahuara's face, and she was simply glowing with excitement.
"Are you going to put it in?"
she grinned.
"And fill me with your seed?"
"That's exactly what I'm going to do," I promised. "But not until after I make you orgasm, too."
"You can do that?"
the orange-haired butterfly woman gasped.
"I didn't think that was something a man was capable of doing to us."
"Just hold on for the ride," I whispered into her ear. "You'll find out soon enough." Before I could make any movements on my own, Ahuara used both her hands to slide my cock to the edge of her pussy. Her wetness covered the head of my cock as it pressed up against her, and the second she released her grip, I ever so slowly pushed myself inside her tightness. Instantly, Ahuara's head leaned back into the table, and her whole body tensed.
What in Cuckoo's name?
She sputtered.
It feels like you're splitting me in half.
I was only about halfway inside of Ahuara, but the walls of her velvet tunnel were already spasming as if she was halfway to orgasm. Her body quivered beneath me, and soft whimpers escaped her mouth as I slowly pushed myself deeper inside of her pussy. When I finally bottomed out against her cervix, I let out a deep moan of satisfaction. "Oh, you're so fucking tight," I groaned. "And so damn wet." Then I started to pull my cock out of Ahuara, and she responded with a panicked gasp. Suddenly, her legs wrapped around my waist, and she used all the muscles she could muster to pull me back inside of her. Somehow, it felt like I'd been pushed in even deeper, and my balls tightened as the warm sensation in my stomach began to coil.
"Oh, my God!"
The orange-haired woman moaned. I pulled my cock back a few inches and then thrust it forward as hard as I could. Ahuara moaned at the new motion, so I began to repeat it in a rhythmic fashion until she eventually threw her hands around my body and dug her fingernails into my back. "You like being fucked hard, don't you?" I teased.
Yes.
Ahuara whimpered.
I love to be fucked hard.
I kept up the rhythm for another few minutes until the butterfly woman's body started to quiver in my arms. Her groans of excitement grew closer and closer together as she tensed up and shook, and I knew it was only a matter of time before she came. Her perky breasts bounced with each thrust, and watching them jiggle in rhythm with my motions only made me 10 times harder. Ahuara must have felt my excitement grow, too, because her eyes suddenly went wide, and she ceased moaning altogether. Her mouth hung open like she was trying to make a sound, but she just stared into my eyes like she was frozen in place. Then her pussy spasmed around me, and she used her legs to pull me all the way back inside of her.
"Ben!"
Ahuara unleashed an eardrum-shattering moan as she orgasmed. Her velvet tunnel took my cock like a vice, and for a brief second I thought I was about to go over the edge as well. Instead, I just watched as the morpho woman's wings fluttered like crazy, and her entire chest flushed red. She pulled away from me and arched her back as she began to come down from her ecstasy, until her moans turned into tired pants.
You didn't finish?
She frowned when she looked up at me. "I'm going to finish," I promised. "I'm going to finish the way you wanted me to finish in the first place. Turn around." Ahuara's eyes lit up when she realized what I wanted. She instantly let go of my body, and my cock slipped out of her pussy. Then I watched excitedly as she turned around, got up on all fours, and presented her tight little ass to me.
"So you did want it this way?"
Ahuara giggled. "I did," I explained as I got into position. "But I wanted it the right way. I'm going to show you how it's supposed to be done." I got to my knees, wrapped my hands around Ahuara's narrow waist, and then guided her back onto my cock. Her pussy was still really tight and very, very wet as I entered her, and we both moaned as her tight tunnel took all of me in down to the base of my cock. Eventually, Ahuara's tight ass was pressed up against my pelvis, and I felt the head of my cock touch her cervix. Ahuara looked back at me with her beautiful orange eyes. Her short hair was now ruffled and disheveled, and it only made her look all the sexier.
"I want your seed, Ben,"
she begged.
"I want you to fill me with your seed."
That wasn't going to be a problem. Now that I was in control, I pulled my cock all the way out of Ahuara and then pushed it back in as slowly as I possibly could. The sensation of her velvet insides clenching against my sensitive shaft was intense, and I just about blew my load right then and there. But I wasn't done quite yet. Ahuara leaned her upper body down against the table, and that somehow made me slide even deeper into her womanhood. We both gasped at the new development, but then we both quickly leaned into it. I fucked Ahuara from behind for nearly 10 more minutes, and I watched her tight ass bouncing on my cock as I listened to her sounds of pleasure. Her wings were now moving without any rhyme or reason, almost as if they'd been short-circuited by the pure ecstasy she was experiencing. Eventually, her pussy began to tighten around me once more, and I knew she was in for a second orgasm. "Do you want to come again?" I whispered.
Yes!
The pixie responded without hesitation.
Make it happen again! Oh, please, Ben!
I increased my pace until finally, Awara's wings froze in place, and her body went rigid. Are you gonna... I began, but her moan cut me off.
Oh, Ben!
Awara nearly screamed as her velvet tunnel clamped down onto my manhood. That's when I hit the wall, and I let out a deep groan as I grabbed Awara's waist, pulled her all the way down onto my cock, and unloaded my seed deep into her womb. I could feel my orgasm flood her body as it pulsated inside of her, and she looked back at me over her shoulder with a nervous relief in her eyes. I slid myself out of Awara and then watched curiously as dollops of my creamy cum oozed out of her well-fucked pussy. Damn, I must have filled her all the way to the brim. Both of us rolled over onto our backs and stared up at the ceiling as we tried to catch our breaths. So, I teased. How was it? Better than your last time.
Oh my gods, yes.
Awara retorted without missing a beat.
A million times better. You really know how to impregnate, Ben.
Don't call it that, I snickered. In my world, when two people do that, it's called making love.
Making love?
The orange-haired pixie giggled.
I like the sound of that much better.
I just hope that worked, I whispered to Awara as I ran my fingers through her orange locks. You deserve a dragon, and you deserve to be the best warrior any Morpho has ever seen. The beautiful butterfly woman leaned over and kissed me tenderly, but then she sat up and walked over to her clothes.
I also want your child.
Awara laughed.
But I wonder how quickly it will take. Dalwin's must have been very quickly, since you two only made love not long before the ceremony began.
There's only going to be one way to find out, I joked. I got up off the table, went over to my clothes, and then slowly began to pull them back over my naked body. That's when I heard a sound that nearly made my balls shoot up into my throat. It sounded like a mix between an eagle's screech and the bark of a dog, and it was loud enough to shake the dragon queen to her core. Immediately after, I heard a powerful swish of air pass by the side of the boat, and then the whole world seemed to turn onto its side. Awara let out a gasp as she flew over and grabbed onto my arm, and we used each other to steady ourselves and keep from falling over.
What in Cuckoo's name was that?
The orange-haired pixie gulped. I don't know, I admitted. But it sounded fucking huge. I tied my weapons belt back around my waist as I bust through the door and marched across the lower deck. Awara and I scurried up the ladder, where we were met with the sight of a swirling water spout above us. Tyrion's scaly figure was near its edge, and he was trying with all his might to fly out of the spout cloud's grasp.
Ben!
Sela cried out as she ran over to us.
Ben, I don't know what's going on.
What happened? I demanded. What just flew past the ship?
I didn't get a good look at it.
The moss-scaled warrior admitted.
All I saw was a long red creature that looked like it was covered with feathers.
Oh, please tell me that wasn't what I thought it was.
Jonas announced as he came up the ladder, and his face was pale. What do you think it is? I asked the soothsayer. Before anyone could answer, the monster emerged from the water spout. Just as Sela had explained, it was nearly 100 feet long, with a narrow, feather-covered body. Its arms and legs were next to non-existent, but it had 4 clawed yellow paws that rested right up against its tube-like body. Its face curved out horizontally like a pointed fan, its snout was long and blocky, and 2 large, thin whiskers protruded from the sides of its nose like long, red noodles. More striking about his appearance, however, was the fact there was a humanoid figure on his back. And it was a wide, muscular figure with green skin. A fucking orc. The monster unleashed another shriek that shook the whole landscape, and we all held on tightly for dear life.
Oh, may Ocean help us now,
Jonas gasped.
What is it? I demanded in a panic. It's a wind dragon, Draco Rex,
the soothsayer sputtered.
And it looks like it's working with the orcs.
Hey there, Dragon King!
The orc atop the wind dragon cackled.
Captain Carnog just wanted me to send his regards before our fleet blows you out of the water. Oh, and those dragons, they're gonna be nothing once you're all out of the way. Carnog, I growled. Son of a bitch. He was still alive. And he had a whole fleet. And a wind dragon. Things just definitely got a lot more complicated.